And I kind of went in dragging my feet a little bit, wanting to do more writing, but thinking, really, do I have to do drama? Do I have to do poetry? Those are not my genres. Yeah, yeah. And I was so wrong. Oh, I also went in with a little bit of arrogance born of ignorance, because as a historian, I knew how to write. History is about writing. Yeah. And I didn't think I needed classes, but why not have this cachet or stamp of a formal degree on what I was doing anyway? I was very quickly disabused of my notion that I didn't need classes in writing. It's just been phenomenal, the experience.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Asian Bookshelf, where we explore Southeast Asia's literary landscape. If you're a discerning reader, or perhaps even an aspiring writer, you're in exactly the right place. In this episode, the 10th of our season one for the Asian Bookshelf, we discuss teaching creative writing in Singapore, the challenges and hopefully its joys as well. My name is John Gresham, writer in Singapore. From 2019 to 2023, I was assistant director and helper at the Asia Creative Writing Program. And I have an MA in creative writing from a Singapore university. Our guests today are an experienced creative writing teacher and a master's student, or graduate now, from LaSalle College of the Arts in Singapore. Dr. Roslyn Prosser is the program leader of LaSalle's MA in Creative Writing. Also with us is Dr. Mandakini Arora. She holds a PhD in history from Duke University and graduated from LaSalle with an MA in Creative Writing. Dr. Ros, have you noticed any differences between teaching creative writing in Adelaide and Singapore?
My response to this question is that it's really a particular area, and my training is in teaching technique. So to teach technique, whether it is structure and how to structure, et cetera, et cetera. But in a way, it's making assumptions to think that there is going to be a difference between these, because I think all students across the world are capable of learning technique. So this is a great question. Whether there is a cultural difference in the student, yes, I think there is. So those cultural differences are things like respect and obedience in Singapore, which is fabulous in a way, because one of the things I notice is the extraordinary fast turnaround in the student response to critique or comment on their work, and also the unbelievably fast development of a student's work and their writing over, say, a two-year or a one-year program. Really noticeable, I think, is the response to critique.
That Australians are more rowdy, whereas Singaporeans are a bit more teachable and sponges soaking up the wonderful thoughts and ideas that you've communicated to
them. I've had some wonderful students in Australia in the same way. Yeah. Teaching at the undergraduate level is very different, because often the creative writing undergraduate level, where you're teaching in the coursework way, students there are often testing out creative writing. They're not, because it's undergraduate, they're not committed writers. So I think the difference at the master's level here is students are either already committed writers Mandakini, or they have come in and they really want to learn how to write or what to do with creative writing, and how it might advance them in different ways, not necessarily to take up a creative writing career. So it's quite different, I think, in those terms. But then at the higher degree level in Australia, you'll find students are, again, incredibly committed and often coming into postgrad programs because they really want to get that degree and attach that to commitment to a longer piece of work where they can work with a one-on-one supervisor if they're lucky.
Yes. So it's in the context of a larger piece of writing or a creative text that they're actually doing these things. Are there any common themes or things that resonate in both Australia and Singapore, or common approaches that you've used that work well in both Australia and Singapore?
I think teaching is teaching wherever you may be. Mm. When I first arrived, I really wanted to hear the stories of Singapore and Southeast Asia, and I really pushed that point in the classroom. And partly it was my brief. My brief was to really anchor the program in the Southeast Asian context. I'd inherited a program where I think there was a looking towards the West. But then I think as time went by, college itself started to see the importance of those stories coming out of the students and moving towards really getting the student to think about who they were what their stories were. So I think I've had great success in really tapping into asking people to consider their relationship to the region. Also, students are from everywhere in the program, and we've had students from the UK, from the US, but more recently getting students from Sri Lanka, Indonesia, the Philippines, right throughout different parts of India and that continent. But fascinatingly, all of those students have unbelievable material that is culturally specific, has incredible historical information in it. And so it's asking the student to consider themselves within that framework and tell the story of who they are, but more where they have come from and where their families have come from and what is their region that they've come from. Yeah. And to think about that through things like food writing or think about that through tracing your family lineage and finding your grandparents' stories or your whatever you know and writing it, not just thinking that's something else.
Yeah. I think that decentering and that decolonizing of a creative writing program is very important. There's been literature, as you know, recently from Matthew Sauzes and Chavez and others on cultural appropriation and on these type of decolonizing strategies in the creative writing classroom. We'll ask a few questions about that later, but let me turn to Mandakini. Why did you decide to study an MA in creative writing rather than just continue with history?
So I don't really see a contradiction there. It wasn't a change in what I was doing. It was almost like an organic evolution. Now, in hindsight, I could knowing what I know about the creative writing program and how much I've gained from it, I could dishonestly come up with a number of reasons, but it actually was very organic. So yes, I'm a historian. However, I did feel I wasn't doing enough, so I joined the American Women's Association, Singapore's Writers Group, which for me was a game changer. I mean, it's a wonderful group of women who meet and workshop each other's writing. And someone there suggested these short courses offered by LaSalle Online Daryl Wetter, who founded the MA program, established the MA program at LaSalle. So I took those, and then it was a hop, skip, and a jump to the master's. And I kind of went in dragging my feet a little bit, wanting to do more writing, but thinking, really, do I have to do drama? Do I have to do poetry? Those are not my genres. Yeah, yeah. And I was so wrong. I also went in with a little bit of arrogance, born of ignorance, because as a historian, I knew how to write. History is about writing, and I didn't think I needed classes, but why not have this cachet or stamp of a formal degree on what I was doing anyway? I was very quickly disabused of my notion that I didn't need classes in writing. It's just been phenomenal, the experience. So yeah, I see it as an organic evolution and the two go hand in hand. I have often read about people like this. This popular historian, Barbara Tuckman, who wrote in this book called Guns of August about the lead up to World War II or World War I, I forget which. But she's a popular historian, not trained as a historian, writes brilliantly, is a Pulitzer Prize winning author. And I've read about her that she's a writer, not a historian. Mm-hmm. That always, comments like that always did jar with me, because I wondered why there had to be a separation. Yeah, you can be a historian. If you're a historian, you are also a writer.
And that's one of the beauties of a creative writing program, is that they can open your eyes to other ways of writing about something. They can expand your own creative paths. And rather than just a creative writing program being just about teaching you a form or teaching what the teacher likes and getting everybody to be like the teacher, they're more about expanding your range of what are the possibilities that creative writing can do, including as you're working on history and creative nonfiction, and especially, I mean, in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years with wonderful creative nonfiction books coming out, and even fiction writers like Olga Tozerik, the Polish Nobel Prize winner, and who's it, Benjamin Labuta, the maniac and things like that, who are kind of mixing fiction and creative nonfiction. Wonderful books to read too.
I think you nailed it when you talked about creative writing, enriching one's writing, because the first class I had with Roz, I remember the first module was creative nonfiction, and she started speaking and it was like these mini light bulbs exploding in my brain where, you know, she talked about hybrid forms, about creative nonfiction being interdisciplinary, about hybrid writing, creating, what was it, new generic or cross-generic product, something like that, and the possibility of creating, of combining history and personal stories. And I was just sitting there riveted.
Exactly. So, and like, I think that's the future of writing, is this mishmash, this hybrid, because now, you know, we are so bombarded with social media, which is massive amounts of hybrid forms in that. So creative writing is all about trying to understand the diversity of the different forms and genres and how they can all explode in a whole mix together. And it can be a complete mess. It can be a horrible porridge that nobody will want to eat. And it's not just about throwing everything together and seeing what comes out. There are ways of doing things well, and there are ways of making a complete disaster. My next question kind of relates to one of the wonderful writers that we had up in the Asia Creative Writing Program, Akhil Sharma. And we asked him about his experience in teaching creative writing in Singapore. And he came out with about 4 points. His first point was, the more local and specific one can make a work, the more universal it usually is. There shouldn't be any shyness about local subjects and language, e.g. Singlish and things like that.
One of the things I do is encourage students to find their stories that relate to where they're from, and that might be from the UK or wherever. I had a fabulous student whose background was Hungarian, and he wrote a wonderful piece using masks, and he actually said about making a mask. So this is about creative writing, allowing anything to happen in the classroom, and he made masks because they related to his heritage. But he then wrote about the making of the mask, and he talked then about the swing to the right and about the lack of freedoms and the loss of freedoms in some countries in Europe. And so he was using his kind of extensive family story to tell his story, and then how people are kind of being made to wear masks in a way to survive in different kinds of places where restrictions come into being. So that's an example which is not from the region, but it's actually someone using the lessons I was using to think about how his own story might fit into, well, yes, I too have a story. Yeah. It's European, but it's saying we have histories, we have our own family relationships, we have our own food, we have our own cultural materials like the mask. So it was really fascinating to see how, so-called white student might respond to lessons that are being set up for Southeast Asian students. And in response to Akhil's point and thinking about who are you, is all of those kinds of economic, social, cultural, contextual, historical, but also your gender, your sexuality, your beliefs, your religion, your education. Think about everything. And even if it's with the early writing student, to make a list of those things, because often they go, what? So just make a list. Where did you go to school? What's the history of that school? It's very specific then, you see. And if you kind of tap into, and single story might come out of just that. What is a story from school? And it might be a story about a terrible event or a great event at school, because memory is the place where we might find stories. And so I really work in the classroom to tap into those memories in a way. So this is exactly to get to, how do we find that local material,
the particular, that is universal. And the next point that Akhil made was that he found that, I think in Asia, that students were quite shy, and they were often reluctant to talk or even, perish the thought, disagree with their teacher. And he encouraged bravery in students. Did you find that in your experiences?
Well, it was wonderful to have Mandakini in the class, because she was constantly challenging me. And I think if you have an older student in the classroom, which is happening every year, who are prepared to put their hand up and say something, then the younger ones start to do the same. once that is released in the classroom and the teacher responds in a particular way and doesn't close it down and doesn't get offended or upset or whatever it is or says, well, you're wrong. So I only have one rule in the classroom, which is the word respect. And if you respect the students and their voice and also then expect respect back, which is complicated, it works at the level of allowing voices and kind of freedom to discuss. But if you're also tapping into personal stories, you're often vulnerable. And so to allow that vulnerability to come out in your work, which is the universal, right?
Yes.
Because everyone is responding to that universal story. It might be very Southeast Asian, but it might be a story of mental health issues or family or, in particular, cultural expectations and norms that the student is wanting to write about and react against. The difficulty of living in a modern society with a family who are still holding on to older expectations. That can be fascinating because the student is then revealing. So that kind of is to get that happening, you really need to allow for the student to be able to speak back and say, but why can't I say this or why can't I say that? So I only have one rule, which is respect.
I think creative writing is one discipline where there is no right answer. The next point that Akhil made was that he saw there was a lot of literary talent in Singapore from many places, not just Singaporean Chinese, but, you know, the Malaysian, Indonesian writers, Singaporean writers here. I think there's people like Sophia Maria Ma. There's people in Singapore. His point was that, look, the market is small and the readers in Singapore is quite small. You have to go international. You have to submit internationally and you should be brave and confident about doing that. And I think we have seen a bit of that. People like, I think, Marcus Ong, Rachel Heng, Jemima Wei, Amanda Lee Coe. We've seen lots of people submitting internationally. Do you have any reflections on submitting internationally or going forth internationally?
There is a huge market internationally for Southeast Asian stories. People live everywhere and they may be interested in those stories of Singapore because Singapore has an incredible diasporic across the world too.
Exactly.
For all kinds of reasons, economic, cultural, social reasons, but they really want to hear the stories of Singapore too. And I don't think people should shy away and think, oh, I have to only write for this audience here. Think that the stories are, as we said before, not just stories of Singapore, but they're stories that speak to the heart of many people. And they may be stories of cultural difficulties or historical stories that tell about some particular event. And look, you have to think about Vietnam. I have a Vietnamese student in the class this year. It's so fascinating to think about how many Vietnamese people live in Australia, Canada, the US. To get a Vietnamese student in the classroom in Singapore to write about the current life of Vietnam, there would be a huge audience across the globe. Publish outside. And so one of my tasks is I'm always sending out publication opportunities that are not local necessarily, but they are across the world. And so students often do submit to other publications. So I am seeing that happen. But writing from here, Singapore is so fascinating.
Because, you know, I've been involved in Singapore literary community and reading and writing Singapore, you know, for 20 years now. And it has broadened out incredibly. And as you say, like Vietnamese, like people like Audrey Chin, I think the Filipino people like Victor Ocampo and Noel De Jesus here. So it's not just a Chinese Singaporean focus. It's not just a very Anglo poetry Singapore focus. It's broadened out like the Indian story, like Prasanthi Ram, like Barley Cow Jazz. Like it's fair game. Singapore is at this crossroads of modern society, contemporary society, as well as the histories and the racism and colonialism and trade routes, silk routes and the Islamic trade routes. So again, the connections there are fascinating and our stories are only just starting to be told and told really well. So I think segues nicely into the fourth point that Akhil was making, which was read Singapore literature, read Singaporean literature. Perhaps, Mandakini, would you like to say anything about that or anything about any recent Singapore literature?
Absolutely. At the American Women's Association, I also review books for their online magazine, and we took a decision, the editor and I, 2 years ago, I believe, to focus on Asian books, preferably Southeast Asian, even more preferably Singapore and Malaysian novels. So whenever I can review a Singapore book, like I did Rachel Heng's book, Jinjin Lee's, this is how we disappeared. So yes, I think it's very enriching for me. Certainly, it's very enriching to read literature of and from my adopted country. Mm-hmm. And I will go back to the first point you mentioned in Akhil's comments. He says people shouldn't be shy about writing using Singlish. And this plugs in with one of my experiences of the master's program at LaSalle. I was just humbled by people's honesty. And of course, Roz, I think you had a lot to do with creating that respectful classroom that you talked about where people were comfortable coming forward with their stories. For me, the most exciting stories, because Singapore, I wasn't born and raised in Singapore, but I am Singaporean now. So for me, the most exciting stuff was from fellow Singaporeans who have grown up here. And I learned things about Singapore in the best possible literary way.
I think so. Yeah.
And many of my peers would use Singlish in their writing, which was also a learning experience for me. So it was great. Yes, I think it's wonderful to be reading Singapore literature.
I think so.
There is a lot happening. And in terms of decolonizing and what we're doing to move away from the colonial model, again, I think, Roz, you did introduce us to writers, ways of thinking. For example, I think of this Barbadian poet who I didn't know about because I don't read much poetry, Kamau Brathwaite, and the poem Calypso, where he goes against the grain of the Western canon and talks about how white colonial thinking kind of straitjackets our thoughts. Mm-hmm. So there were a few of those. And then, of course, in the Singaporean scene, we read Joshua Ip's sonnets from the Singlish. Another one I remember is Alfian Sa'd's poem. It's wrong. What? Having sex in an army bed. It's wrong to have sex in an army bed. I forget the exact title. But yeah, all this was really eye-opening for me. So like I said, initially, when you asked me about why I got the master's, in hindsight, I could dishonestly say these were all the reasons, but these were actually eye-openers as we went along.
Roz, what was the biggest challenge in teaching creative writing that you had in Singapore?
Obedience. One of the biggest challenges is getting students to really understand what is creativity. So I don't know if you all watched the Prime Minister speaking about creativity. But his thing was, the challenge is that Singaporeans learn how to become creative and what is creativity, because for so long it's been a STEM-based learning system and education system. But creativity is not something that can be learnt in half an hour. Creativity is something that you have to encourage, work with, develop, make happen in specific moments with students in the classroom, so that they can tap into a part of their brain that has been kind of is there from children, but from childhood, but is kind of channeled and funneled into becoming a successful Singaporean or a successful human being. It's everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. It's not just here. But here it's much more specific, I think. So the biggest challenge is, what is creativity? How do you find it? So I usually implement lots of exercise and writing prompts to find something in someone, a kernel, and it usually comes about. But what I work with is the everyday. So the everyday objects. So I always use the good morning towels, which are just an ordinary, average, everyday object in Singapore. And I bring them in and I put them on the table and I say, write about this. And of course, you can see people's faces go, what? Why am I going to write about that? What is that thing that's just there every day? We see it kind of thrown about and
familiarity.
Wrecked. Yeah. But to tap into the uses made of it, the language on it. It's got two languages on it, right? It's got Mandarin and it's got English. It's a use object. Mm-hmm. It's used by all kinds of people. It's used in this household that's kind of a working class household, and it's used in this household, which is a wealthy household. So that is a way to tap into seeing everyday objects or the everyday or the ordinary as a place of wonder. And that is working every week, slowly, to develop the idea of what is creativity. And I think that's the difference in the creative writing program. It's not a writing program. Mm. It's a creative writing program. Yeah. And people have a kind of mixed response to that. They think, oh, creative, that just means it's genre, romance fiction, crime fiction, poetry, whatever. It actually isn't. It's more about what might enable a writer to turn to the creative, which is, really a great segue to Mandakini, to thinking about turning from history to making history, writing creative in some ways, or to get people to move to that.
Recently, we've seen a lot, and we touched on it earlier, about how historically creative writing has been very Anglo-centric and very hierarchical. What, do you think that's changing in Singapore? Do you think creative writing has become much less hierarchical? Do you have any approaches yourself to try and decolonize the creative writing classroom?
We're all in the colony all the time, but also Singapore is a fascinating post-colonial subject to work in, right? It's not just the colony still exists, kind of elements are still there. One of my key observations is the use of old colonial-based systems that have moved into the digital. That is really fascinating because you think, wow, this is an incredible digital economy here. And yet a lot of the systems are still kind of like someone sitting in a room with 1,000 files on deck. So the colonial system is still here. However, this is a unique place, I think, because even though you still have the Raffles statue, but you also have people writing about and telling new stories about colonization here. So you can't kind of throw away history, but you still must acknowledge history in some way as a colonial state. So decolonizing the classroom is a process.
Yes, yeah. A journey,
Yes. And here I am, a kind of Anglo. Well, I'm not really. My father was Welsh and he was a coal miner, child of a coal miner and a coal miner's son, and he was a coal miner himself. So I don't feel in any way kind of a colonist. However, I know that in Australia, my position is very privileged in that colony, which still has a King Charles.
Yeah.
So we're kind of always negotiating colonial spaces, but trying to make new in the colonial space is our task.
And decentering and find new centres away from London, New York, Frankfurt, publishing centres, and try and build them in Singapore.
And at some level, I think just the fact of welcoming Singlish in our poetry and our writing. You know, Brathwaite talks about nation language and embracing that is an act of decolonization.
Yeah.
And also the way the focus now in the creative writing program is to focus on your truth and your story in those writing prompts. That too is a little bit, I think, going against the grain. I don't know as much about the traditions as you guys do, but yes, I think all moving in a good direction.
We hope that you have enjoyed this episode of the Asian Bookshelf and have a deeper understanding about creative writing in Singapore. So this is the final episode of the season as well. And we've covered a lot of ground this season and we've really enjoyed ourselves. My fellow colleagues, producers T.A. Morton and Devika Misra, who've done such a great job about organising all these particular books that we've really enjoyed discussing and all these topics that have really resonated with us and hopefully have meant something to you, dear listeners. So we really enjoy bringing this podcast and hopefully it highlights aspects of the diverse and exciting literary landscape across our region of Southeast Asia and Asia. And we'd like to thank you all for tuning in and for your comments on social media these last 6 months. So thank you very much for listening to the Asian Bookshelf, home to words and voices from Asia today.